Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Technology today has never been smarter. But smart only matters when you put it to good use. Together we can build a smarter future for all of us. Let's put smart to work. Find out how at ibm.com/smart.
It's your Daily Sox Podcast. It's your Daily Sox Podcast. It's where you're going to find out what the Sox are doing. It's your Daily Sox Podcast. It's your Daily Sox Podcast.
I know the Red Sox actually just played a game in Toronto, and if you tuned in expecting to hear how that went and get my snarky commentary about it, sorry to disappoint you. I'm in Santorini right now. Yeah, I know. Even broadcasters get to take some time off now and again. But don't worry. This is the week where we're going to bring to you something a little different. We're going to take a break from actually breaking down the games because, sorry, I can't get MLB TV or NESN in Santorini. Just not happening. So what I decided to do was to bring you a little closer to the TV voices that you hear on NESN. I know that this is WEEI, and you hopefully know by now all about Joe Castig and a little bit about me, quite a bit about Sean McDonough, a little bit about Mario. Who else are we running through here? Dale Arnold, Chris Berman, et cetera, et cetera. Tom Caron. There's literally like 100 different people doing this year. So we figured we'd get you over to the other side of the line, where we'd go TV instead. And you think you know someone like Jerry Remy, but do you really know Jerry Remy, the broadcaster? There's been a lot said and written about Jerry. He's gone through a lot, and you guys don't need me to tell you that. I'm not even going to ask Jerry about that. The health issues, family issues, it's really incredible that he still walks around with a smile, which he totally does. Fall River native, grew up in Somerset. You guys probably know this. Somerset High. Roger Williams University, did you guys know that? Not a lot of people, I think, know that about Jerry, because that's not really a baseball factory. But played for the Angels, of course, played for the Red Sox. He was actually an All-Star his first year with the Red Sox. I don't know if everybody's aware of that in 78. He only had 7 major league home runs in 2,300 at-bats, but 5 of the 7 were off 20-game winners. He got Fergie Jenkins, he got Jack Morris, he got Mike Norris, he got Jim Perry, he got Catfish Hunter, which is all pretty impressive. But more impressive to me has always been the man, Jerry Remy. He and I had a chance to work together a bit on Fox Television way, 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 way back in the day. You guys all know him with NESN. And I'm sorry, anybody that's had something called Jerry Remy Day at Fenway Park, and that was done in 08 because it was 20 years back then of Jerry with NESN. So now we're well into the 30s with that arrangement, and I think you'll agree with me. Thank goodness that it continues. So without any further ado, and I can say it that way because Jerry is of French-Canadian descent. You'd never know that from his current accent, but it is true. Let's get you to the conversation he and I had before the team took off for, I guess, Toronto and Detroit on this road trip. Here's Jerry Remy. Enjoy. Well, on today's edition of Let's Check In with Somebody That We Don't Get a Chance to Check In With That Often, it's Jerry Remy. And I figured everybody would love that because there's no one who's a Red Sox fan who doesn't enjoy the Rem Dog. As a guy, I guess to kind of out myself, Jerry, and I hope you remember this, you and I probably worked together 10, 12 games years and years and years and years ago, back when Fox would poach you and make you do games. So remind me, when was the first year that you actually started doing this or thereabouts?
This I started in 1988. Was the first year that I did Red Sox baseball. I actually was finished playing in the spring of 86. I coached the remainder of 86 at the minor league level, and then I took a year off. I wanted to manage. There were no available jobs at the time, so I took a year off, and then this became available. And I wasn't that excited about it, really, when it became available. I never considered myself somebody that would be on TV or, you know, radio or anything like that. So, but they convinced me to finally come in for an interview, and I did. And things seemed to work out. You know, it's just I think what was helped me was I was local, and I was, you know, fresh off the field. So I think those are the things that helped me. So it's hard for me to believe that this started in 1988. I'm in my 32nd year of doing it. I just can't believe it.
So take me through, though. You say they called you. Who exactly approached you, and how did they do it?
Well, they just... John Claiborne at the time was running Nesson, and he just asked my agent at the time if I had any interest in it. And I said, no, I don't, you know. And I thought I was going to probably go on and be a coach and then eventually a manager and hopefully someday at the major league level. And but then when they started talking about it, it seemed kind of interesting because at that point we were only doing 81 games a year. Half the schedule, so I didn't have to travel as much as I did as a player. I could stay home and watch my kids grow up a little bit. And, you know, then eventually, the longer I did it, I got to do all the games, both, you know, 162 a year. So I did that for a number of years. Now I'm starting to cut back on the games, and I'm doing probably about 90 this year. So, you know, it was the best thing that ever happened to me, really, because it, you know, if I had been a manager of the big leagues, I'd have been fired probably 9 times already, and who knows, I'd have had to travel the whole country. So I've been fortunate to be able to stay home.
You would have kept the long tradition alive, though, of smoking heaters in the dugout. I mean, you got Jim Leland and all these other guys. We don't see that anymore. All these guys are eating alfalfa sprouts.
Well, it's a good thing we don't see it anymore because those didn't do me any good at all. So, yeah. You know, it's a change for the better. The baseball in general has changed for the better in a lot of different ways. Yeah.
So between 86 and 88, that one year that you just had Jerry time, what was that year like? What did you do?
Well, I was kind of planning on what I wanted to do. You know, I was looking for an opportunity to obviously stay in the Red Sox organization. I just had to wait to see if a job became available. And unfortunately, there was nothing really available at that time. I did get a call from Dave Dombrowski. He probably doesn't remember it, but he called me. He was with the Montreal Expos, and he wanted me to be a base running coach at the minor league level, like a roving instructor. And, you know, I said no to that, because I really didn't want to start traveling back all over the country in the minor leagues again after being in the big leagues for so long. So I just basically sat home, did nothing, thinking about, you know, waiting for a managerial job to open up in the Red Sox organization. And in the meantime, this became available.
So if you don't mind, I want to start the process of walking you through your partners. You've had some amazing ones,
yes.
And they all love you so much, which tells me that you're doing something right. But walking around and seeing Sean McDonough every once in a while now this year, I think a lot of Red Sox fans are like me. They just hearken back to a time when, man, that was fun. That was cool. What did Sean mean to you, do for you when you guys were together?
Well, he's the guy that brought me out of my shell, really, you know, because, you know, the first couple of years that I did this job, I really didn't know what I was doing. I had no clue. I worked with Ned Martin, who was great to break in with. He was a guy that, you know, he didn't jump all over if you made mistakes. He'd let you learn on your own. But Sean was the kind of guy that would challenge you, you know, in the booth. He would question you. He would, you know, say, what's this all about? Why are they doing this? And you had to have an answer for him. Or if you didn't, you know, he'd come right back at you.
Right.
So, and he also brought up my personality, which I have kind of a dry sense of humor. And I never really came across, I think, on air. And he's very similar to that.
Yeah.
And so, you know, he kind of brought that out on me. And he's the guy that eventually named me the Rem Dog, which is stuck to this day. And he did so much for me. I know I'll never forget, you know, how much he meant to me and what he meant for my career. Because I really felt like when he got in there, I turned a corner and I became a professional broadcaster. I never considered myself that until that point. And it was challenging working with him, like I said, because, you know, if he didn't agree with something you say, he'd let you know.
Yeah, well, you'd have to ping-pong back pretty quick.
Exactly. Yeah. You'd have to have an answer for him very quickly. And so, and we got along very, very well, you know. And I've been fortunate, as you said. I've worked with great guys, and I've gotten along well with all of them. You know, there's nothing worse than being in a booth, you know, for a long period of time with somebody you can't stand or you don't like.
Right.
It's very unpleasant. And that, fortunately for me, has never happened. I've always been with people that I have a tremendous amount of respect for. I've always considered the play-by-play people professionals in the booth. I'm just the ex-player that's in the booth with the baseball knowledge. But, you know, the guys that I've worked with, they can do all sports. They can do anything. They can do football. They can do hockey. They can do basketball, baseball, everything. So I consider those guys the professionals.
Let me move you forward to the Don Orsillo years, and I think that's when I probably listened most to you and just all the laughter. And obviously, you know, Orsillo's got the greatest laugh in the history of the world. You can't not laugh along with him because he's, like, wheezing and dying and it's just, you know, and all of that. So if I had to – I don't know if you keep a personal Rolodex of top 10 moments, but if I had to ask you, pizza throw or boob grab – which is the one that comes up first?
You know, actually, neither one for me.
Really?
No, it was one day we were doing a game, and, you know, none of this stuff was staged. I mean, it just happens during the game.
It's organic.
Yeah, and so, you know, I was talking, I was explaining a replay, and my tooth fell out. It just fell out on the table. And he came up to me, and he started to, you know, what happened and this and that, and he brought out a toolbox, and he was trying to put the tooth back in, and I thought that was hilarious. We had a lot of funny moments, you know, maybe too funny for some people, I don't know, but we kind of bonded, you know, after a while, and we kind of had similar personalities, and there was nothing about going into a game and saying, you know, okay, we got to make this funny, it just, things happen during a baseball game that aren't funny. And they happen in the stands that are funny. So we were both willing to take that and run with it and have some fun with it. But, yeah, the pizza throw is right up there. They still talk about it in Boston all the time now.
Of course.
And we had a load of them. But he was just fun to work with. You know, we worked together 15 years. And, you know, it's just always tough to see, you know, some guy leave that you've been with for that long. But, you know, you leave and then you get a guy like Dave O'Brien coming in, you know, who's the ultimate professional also. So it's been a very pleasant experience for me. I've been very fortunate with the people I've got to work with.
I do want to ask you about Obi, but just back to Don for a second. There's one that I don't know if you remember or not that I just saw on YouTube the other day. It's when he was getting on you for pronunciations and your New England accent and talking to you about how you think you flew Delta coming into whatever city that you were in.
Well, he's not the only one. Everybody gets me, you know, and I can't change that.
Well, say Xander Bogaerts real quick.
Xander Bogaerts.
Yeah, that one wasn't bad, actually. Yeah, that was
I get told for the Amiga pit zone, and I get criticized about everything, but, you know, that's just the way I grew up. That's just how I grew up talking, and I wasn't going to be able to change for this job. It was hard enough to do the job itself without having to learn the English language.
Right.
So, you know, people, I think, have become accustomed to that, and they do make fun of it, and you know, that's okay with me. It's who I am.
We're with Jerry Remy, dropping knowledge with Jerry Remy right now. So Dave O'Brien and you now, again, just a wonderful listen, obviously. And because you've had the experience of working those network games, and believe me, I'm not super professional at all, but I know you worked with some other guys. I believe you probably worked with Joe Buck at some point or Tom Brenneman, because that was kind of the bunch of us in that
right.
In those days, in the late 90s, early O's. But Obi is just, as you kind of alluded to, the consummate professional. How's it been as you've gotten to know him and know each other's sense of humors?
Well, it takes a while. You know, there's no question about it. As I said, I worked with Don for 15 years, and we became very close. And all of a sudden, he's gone, and the new guy comes in. And I didn't really know Dave that well. I mean, he worked on the radio side, but you know, we didn't really communicate a whole lot.
You'd see each other in the lunchroom or whatever, but
yeah,
you're not, like, hanging, right?
Exactly. So, you know, it was a learning process, I think, for both of us. But the big thing for me was the first spring training game we did together. We sat down, he did his thing, I did my thing, and I thought it worked right away. And I walked away from that first game saying, you know, this is going to be fine. This is good, because you used to work with the same guy for 15 years. All of a sudden, a new guy comes in, and you don't know how it's going to mesh.
Right.
And I felt very comfortable after the first game. I said, you know, but that's, again, what I'm talking about. You know, you guys are professionals. You do this so well. You know so many sports. You know how to set up your analysts. You know how to do things like that. So it makes it so much easier for a guy like me who really doesn't or didn't understand the TV business.
Last one for you, because another of your partners, obviously, is Eck. And I think a lot of fans really appreciate when it's Obi and you and Dennis all in the booth at the same time. How enjoyable is that for you to have a sparring partner? I mean, he was a great pitcher. You were the hitter. You don't always see things the same way. But just as a casual observer, it seems like you guys play off each other really well.
Yeah, I like it. You know, and I was never a fan of a three-man booth. I didn't like most of the ones that I've heard. And I think it takes a special combination. And I think, you know, you hit it on the nose. One's a pitcher, one's a position player. I think that starts it. But the other thing that's more important than that is we know each other for so long. You know, we knew each other from the minor leagues through the big leagues. We played together as teammates on the Red Sox. So we kind of know each other's personality. I still don't understand a lot of his sayings.
Nobody does, yeah.
Yeah, you know, like a pair of shoes. I didn't know what that was all about until I asked, you know. So, you know, but there's a comfort level there. And I think because it's a pitcher infielder combination, I think it works. And Dave does a wonderful job navigating it. And the other thing about it is there's no real big egos in our booth. So, you know, we don't fight for time. You know, right. It's if we get something to say, you say it, and you just play off each other. So I really enjoyed it. I think it's a great broadcast. I really do. And I think it may be one of the best in baseball.
I agree. Now to put a lid on it, this podcast is going to be running just after the Red Sox have completed their trip to London. So I want to ask you, and this is kind of retroactive because, I mean, whatever we did out there, it's already over. But best vacation you've ever had? Have you been, I assume you've been to Europe, you've done a bunch of things. What's the very best vacation you've ever had?
Xander Bogaerts' country of Aruba.
Yeah, really?
That's the absolute best I've ever been. We've been down there probably 15 times. Wow. And I just love the island. The people are so nice. They're friendly. It's a very safe island. The food's terrific. The accommodations are great. The beaches are great. So we try to get down there at least once a winter. And unfortunately, the last couple of winters, I haven't been able to do it because I've been in treatment.
Yeah.
But, you know, hopefully, if everything goes well, like this winter, we'll get back there. But I love that island. And probably the worst trip I've been on was to Tokyo. We had to go over there and play. I forget what year it was. We opened the season in Tokyo, and that was awful coming back. You know, it was an experience going there, but coming back, we had to go to Toronto. Oh, no, California first, then Toronto. And by the time we got to Toronto, everybody's just totally wiped out. So, yeah. You know, in London, I'm not going because it's not locally televised. It's nationally televised, so we're not doing it. So the only thing I would miss about going to London, I think the only thing that I would do there is go to Abbey Road. I think that's the only thing, the Abbey Road Studios. I'd want to see that, where the Beatles made all that magic. Other than that, I don't really know.
You'd be okay.
I don't care.
Yeah, well, Big Ben is just a big clock. I mean, we got that over here.
Yeah, I don't, you know, I can find clocks here in the United States.
All right, great to catch up with Jerry Remy. Thank you, buddy, for everything.
All right, thank you, Josh.
All right, perfect.
I hope you guys got a little something out of that, and we will continue this series, if you will. We'll have Dennis Eckersley on tomorrow's podcast, and then we'll close with Obie, with Dave O'Brien. This is Josh Lewin. Appreciate you guys. Talk soon.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.